All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves in Parshas Bo. So I want to begin actually at the beginning of the Parsha, and we're going to work our way a little bit towards last week's Parsha as well. So remember, we pick up in the beginning of Parshas Bo in the midst of the Makos. Specifically, again, in last week's Parsha, we finished off with the Makah of Barad, of Hail, and we begin in this week's Parsha with the Makah of Arba, of locusts. So remember, Moshe Rabbeinu gives advance warning, the locusts are going to come, and at this point in time, the servants of Paro recognize that the writing's on the wall, they're not going to emerge from these circumstances unscathed, and they are essentially willing to go ahead and throw in the towel and say, let Klal Yisrael go. So that's where we pick up. Vayomer Avdei Paro Elov. So the servants of Paro say to Paro, Ad Masa Yihi Azalana Lemokesh. How long is this guy, referring to Moshe Rabbeinu, going to be a stumbling block for us? Shalach Es Ha'anashim V'Avdu Es Hashem Elokeihem. Let's send the people go. Let the people go. Let them go serve Hashem their God. Haterem Teida Ki Avda Mitzrayim. And now, this is an incredible turning point in the story, because it's here that the advisors of Paro essentially tell him, do you not realize that Egypt is lost? Do you not understand what it is that is unfolding over here? So just in general, as an aside, one always has to ask themselves why the Torah decides to go into such incredible detail with the Exodus narrative. Meaning, think about this in just a moment. If you wanted to condense the entire story of Yetzias Mitzrayim into a few lines, how would you condense it? Jews were enslaved for 210 years. God took us out. He brought a whole host of plagues. We went out. The sea split. We got the Torah. We got Eretz Yisrael. Shalom HaYisrael. Right? Meaning, if you want to condense the entire narrative, the Torah goes into such incredible detail regarding the entire story of the Exodus narrative. Remember, think about this in just a moment. You have Shmos, Va'era, Bo, B'Shalach. You have 3.5, not all of Shalach, but you have 3.5 parshios that are all devoted to the Yetzias Mitzrayim story. It's an incredible amount of time devoted to a story, especially since the Torah is not a storybook. So rather, we have to understand that any stories that the Torah does tell us are because of the moral ethical lessons to be learned. So there are many lessons to be learned from Yetzias Mitzrayim, but of course, one of the most dramatic lessons is a lesson in human nature. Because the entire story of Paro is the story of getting so caught up in your self-delusional perceptions that you can't see reality for what it is. Paro, even when it's objectively clear that he's going to lose the battle, Paro, even when it's objectively clear that he's going to be overpowered by the Ribono Shel Olam, refuses to see the reality. Ah, you say to yourself, that's ridiculous. What a fool. What kind of crazy behavior? So of course we know, we all do this. All of the time. We become vested in a particular way of life. We become vested in a particular behavior. Many of us live with incredible inconsistencies. I know that there are things that I'm objectively doing wrong. So why don't I change it? I mean, you don't have to answer for me. But if this applies to you, why don't we change our behaviors? The very simple answer is because I'm vested in this way of life. This is who I am. This is what I am. Perhaps I have social circles that have been formed around this personality. Perhaps I have other aspects of my life that are built upon these behaviors. And if I change the behaviors, I have to deconstruct many other things in my life. And at the end of the day, I'm just simply not willing to make those changes. That's called a Paro lifestyle. I know it's a dramatic term, but that's called a Paro lifestyle, because what did Paro do? Paro created for himself a reality. The reality is, I am the master, they are my slaves. I am the God. Remember, Paro portrayed himself as a God. I'm the God, and bend my knee before no one else. And therefore, again, even when confronted with the incontrovertible reality that he has to bend his knee before God, that he's not as powerful as God, he refuses to yield. To the point, that even when he's doing himself and his people a disservice, he refuses to bend his knee before God. So that's what's unfolding over here. The advisors are telling him, Paro, we're done. We're done. The best thing we could do right now is let them go. Vayushav es Moshe ves Aaron Paro, vayomra aleihem, l'chu ivdu as Hashem elokeichem miva miyahochem. So again, it appears that Paro is willing to cave, that Paro is finally willing to throw in the towel. He summons Moshe and Aaron. He says to them, okay, go serve your God. Who's going? They say this is the number one pasuk test. Vayar Moshe b'na'areinu u'biskeneinu neilech, b'vaneinu b'vnoseinu b'tzonu v'kareinu neilech, ki chag Hashem lanu. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, everyone. Everyone goes. There's no guest list. It's for all of Klal Yisrael. So what happens over here? So remember again, everything was going so well, except what just occurred now? What just occurred? So Moshe didn't agree to his terms. Or in other words, what's happening over here? Paro is more than happy. Paro is willing to allow the people to go as long as what? As long as he retains control. People love control. People love to be in control. People love to have the illusion of control. Paro is okay with letting the people go as long as they go on his terms. Because if you go on my terms, the men will go for 3 days, we'll choose a spot, I am still in control. As long as I don't have to yield the baton of control, I'm willing to let you go. Now Moshe says, no, Paro, you're not in control. We're going to go with our sons, with our daughters, the men and the women, the sheep, the oxen, everything and everyone is going. Here's the switch. Vayomra aleihem, pasuk yud, yehi chein Hashem imachem kasher shalach eschem ve'estapchem, ru'u ki ra'ab neged p'neichem. So he said to them, so may the Lord be with you, just as I will let you and your young children out, see that evil is before your face. Which is another way of saying, no, I changed my mind, I'm shutting down the process, I'm not letting you go. And look what's amazing, lochein, you're not appropriate, l'chuna gvarim v'evduas Hashem, if you want, the most I will allow is for the men to go serve God, ki osa atem evakshim, because if you're serious about serving God, it's the men's job to serve God, I'm sending the men, not the women. Vaygarish osam me'es p'nei paro. And Paro chases them away. Now, this is a very dramatic turn as well, because although before, Paro's had, we'll put it mildly, disagreements with Moshe and with Aaron, and those disagreements ultimately have led to the dissolution of conversation. There's no more. But this is the first time we see that Paro chases, Vaygarish, literally he chased them away. What's the wording over here? Yeah, he chased them out from before Paro. So the reason why I think this is intriguing, this Vaygarish of Sameh Is Pnei Paro, is because it represents a shift in the relationship between Paro and Moshe and Aaron. Because look at number two. Number two is already in last week's parasha, by Barad. So the Torah says, remember, in the plague of hail, Vayishlach Paro Vayikra L'Moshe La'an Vayomer Aleihem, Chatosi Aleihem, Chatosi Apam, Hashem Atzadik, so remember again, after the plague of Barad, Paro has like this incredible awakening and says these amazing things. I have sinned to God. God is righteous. I am wicked. Ha'atiru el Hashem. Pray to God on my behalf. V'rav mihios kolos elokim u'barad. V'ashalcha eschem veloso sifun la'amod. So Paro takes such a deferential tone to Moshe and to Aaron. Please daven on my behalf. Please entreat your God on my behalf. As soon as you stop the plague, I'll let all of you go. And in fact, if you look at number three, tonight we're really going to be focusing on a piece by Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz in his Sefer Sichos Moser. So Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz asked a simple question. Ki'ilu osok lo im pichusim v'rekim chas shalom. Now Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz is commenting back in number one, the last phrase. How could it be that Paro chases away Moshe and Aaron? How could it be Vayigarish Osa Me'is Pnei Paro? How could that be that that's his reaction? Chaim Shlevit says, Kilu Osok Lo Im Pechusim Erekim. Paro's behavior towards them is as if what? As if they're nothings. Now we know that Paro regarded Moshe and Aaron, he didn't like them very much, but he felt an incredible sense of awe towards them. How do we know that? What would you have expected Paro to do to Moshe and Aaron very early on in the story?
Kill them.
Right? After all, again, they represent an absolute threat to his power, a threat to his authority, a threat to his kingdom. So Paro has no problem executing people. He's been killing Jews for 210 years. Not the same Pharaoh, but pharaohs have been killing Jews for 210 years. But yet, he doesn't lay a hand on them. Now, at the end, when things become a lot more intense, Paro does tell them, the next time I see you, I will kill you. But we never see him making a direct threat before the end, when things become very tension-filled. So obviously, he understood that he had to respect them. Meaning, again, if somebody becomes the mouthpiece of God, and somebody's changing the laws of nature just through their very simple words, that demands a certain level of awe and respect. So ask Reb Chaim Shlevitz, that awe and respect has been coming out the entire time, except now, at the end of this makah, suddenly Paro wants to chase them away. He says, Heich nitan lahavin, yachas kazeh, la'achar hisbatlus v'ri'iyas erkam haniskav al Moshe v'Aaron. How are we to understand Paro's shift in behavior towards Moshe and Aaron? In number two, which was last week's parasha, a very deferential, honor-filled approach. Yet in the beginning of this week's parasha, Vaigarish osam me'es p'nei paro. He chases them out like they're two nothings, like they're insignificant individuals. How do we understand the shift in his behavior, in his attitude towards them? So take a look at number four. So in order to answer this, we're going to go on a little bit of a detour. So the detour, I want to take you to last week's parasha. Look at number four. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe v'el Aaron, kichu lachem meloch afneichem piach kivshon. So we're going to analyze this a little bit. So remember, God tells Moshe and Aaron, I'm just going to use this English translation, take yourselves handfuls of furnace soot, and Moshe shall cast it heavenward before Paro's eyes. And that soot will blanket all of Egypt. And that soot will literally fall down upon all of Egypt, and it will become boils, breaking out into blisters upon man and upon beast throughout the entire land of Egypt. So this is the makkah of shchin, the makkah of boils. Take a handful of soot, throw it up heavenward, it's going to blanket all of Egypt, and that soot is going to turn into boils. Okay? Number four, verse 10, Pasuk Yud, Vayichu es piach ha-kivshon, Vayamdu lefnei paro. So they take the soot, they stand before Paro, Vayizrok osem oso Moshe ha-shamaymo. Moshe throws the soot heavenward, Vayishchin abu ba'os porech padon behemo. And again, the soot becomes boils on man and on animal. V'lo yachlu ha-chartumim la'amu lefnei Moshe v'nei ha-shchin, ki ayo ha-shchin ba-chartum b'chol Mitzrayim. Now, of course, this makkah is so profound, you know, physically profound, that the Chartumim, the magicians, the sorcerers, were unable to stand before Paro because of the intense pain and the discomfort of the boils. Look at Pasuk Yud Beis, I'm going to draw your attention to. God strengthened Paro's heart. Velo shama aleihem, he did not listen to them. Kasher dibra Hashem Moshe, as God had already warned Moshe that Paro was not going to listen. So if I were to ask you, the fact that the Torah says that God strengthened Paro's heart, what do you see from that? That he was ready to give in. What you see from here is that had HaKadosh Baruch Hu not intervened, had God not intervened in Paro's heart, Paro would have said, Gamarnu, we're done over here, get out. Get out, I can't deal with this anymore, I can't take this anymore, go free. God intervenes, whatever this means, that he hardens Paro's heart, on the most basic level, what it sounds like is, he takes away Paro's free choice, or bolsters Paro's ability to make the wrong choices, whichever one it is. God intervenes and prevents Paro from letting the people go. So, again, we're going a little bit of a detour over here. The obvious question that comes up is why? Meaning, what was it about the makkah of Shechin? What was it about this particular makkah that had Paro ready to throw in the towel and send the people out? So, of course, the simple answer is...
He already had pain, that's why he had the blood baths,
no? I'm sorry?
He already had pain, that's why he had the baths.
Good, so the truth is, again, it could be that just this amplified his already present condition that he had pre-existing conditions already, even before the makkah. So the simple answer is, it was just too painful. Meaning, everybody has their threshold. Even if a person has a high pain threshold, at the end of the day, there comes a certain point in time where all I'm interested in is alleviating and getting rid of my pain. Take a look at number five. That's what the Sfarno says. The Sfarno says, why is Paro ready to give in? Why is he ready to give up? Why is he ready to free the people after Shechin? Kilo haya sovel ze beli safek. Because he wasn't able to take the pain. It's very simple. Paro has a pretty strong threshold, right? He was able to withstand dam, svardeya, kinim, arov, dever. It's a good number of makos. Comes Shechin, it's just too personally painful. He's ready to let them go. Vaychazek Hashem esleif Paro. God strengthens his heart. God strengthens his resolve. And God allows him ultimately, again, not to free the people. The Ramban has a different approach. The Ramban in number 6 says, why was Paro ready to give in? V'itochim shebemakos harishonos hayu hachartumim machzikim eslibo lehispar etzal bechachmas. Etzal bechachmasam. Because it's interesting. The Ramban says, in the previous Makos, Paro kind of had like a cheering section. He had a group of people, namely his sorcerers, who were behind his iron resolve, who were willing to say, you know what, keep the Jews enslaved no matter what the cost. Well, what happens? Well, now Shechin, where the Chartumim, right, where the sorcerers, they're nursing their wounds, whatever they're doing, but they're not even able to stand before Paro. Paro has no cheering section anymore, right? He has no one encouraging him to go ahead and just be a dictator. So what happens? Ve'ein ozer lo, ve'ein somech be'ivalso, rak avonosav asheril kudunu. So therefore, again, in the sense of Ramban, this was the first Makkah where the Chartumim, the sorcerers, are not egging him on. So because of that, when he has no cheering section, he's ready to let the people go. And again, he's ready to let the people go. And it's only because God intervenes, God strengthens his heart, that ultimately, again, he denies the Jewish people's right to leave the land of Egypt. But there's another reason. And this is what I want to draw your attention to. There's another reason, ultimately, again, why Paro was ready to throw in the towel after the Makkah of Shechin. Watch, look at number 7. An amazing Gemara Masechah Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, I'm Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar said, Adam HaRishon, Min Ha'aretz Ad Rakia Haya. This is a very beautiful Gemara. Adam HaRishon, now it sounds like it's describing his stature. Adam HaRishon's stature was min ha'aretz, from the earth, ad l'rakia, up until the sky. Shene'emar, l'min hayom asher bara Elokim Adam al ha'aretz, ul'miktzeh ha'shamayim ad kitzeh ha'shamayim. So a literal reading of the pasuk says that when God created man on the earth, he went from one end of the heavens to the other end of the heavens. So literally the Gemara says, Adam HaRishon is min ha'aretz, from the land, ad l'rakia. Kevan shesarach, when Adam HaRishon sins, Hiniach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yado Alav Umi'ato. When Adam sinned, literally translated, the Ribbono Shel Olam put his hand on Adam, Umi'ato. Mi'ato means what? He made him smaller. He made him smaller. Now, whenever you see Gemara like this, you know, it cries out Darsheni, you know, to understand what is this saying. So we're going to skip around a little bit. Take a look at number 12. Sir Chaim Shmulevitz quotes this Gemara. This is in 12 Aleph. He says, Amru Chazal, Adam HaRishon Misofa Olam Va'at Sofa Haya. Adam HaRishon Min Ha'aretz Ad L'Rakia, Kevan Shesarach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hiniach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Alav, Yadu Alav Umiyato. Sir Chaim Shmulevitz quotes our Gemara. Adam HaRishon originally was from the earth, all the way to the heavens. When he sins, God puts his hands on him and lessens him, makes him smaller. Sir Chaim Shlomo writes the following. V'nira, de'ein ha'kavana kipshuto. So the first thing he says is, this is not to be understood literally. Adam HaRishon, this is not talking about Adam HaRishon's physical stature. This is not a statement about, again, his height or his width, or his, rather, Sherochbo v'govo hayu misofo olam va'ad sofo, umina aretz ad l'rakia. So if it's not literal, so what is the meaning? Ela hakavanehi l'kochosav v'hasagaso. This is exceptionally profound. Rather, says Rechaim Shmulevitz, when the Gemara says that Adam HaRishon originally is min ha'aretz ad l'rakia, it's not a reference to his physical dimensions, but rather it's a reference to his spiritual, emotional ones. That Adam HaRishon, kala olam kulo, misof ha'olam va'ad sofo, umina aretz ad l'rakia, the entire world, from one end of the world to the other end of the world, from the earth until the heavens, hakol haya bichlal hesig yado. Adam HaRishon has control over the world. Now we'll discuss what that means. But says Rechaim Shmulevitz, that's the meaning of it. It says that Adam, when he was created, was min ha'aretz ad l'rakia. It means that Adam has control over his circumstances. Adam HaRishon is in control of this world, in control of his life. V'lo haya mugbal machmas richuk makom. And the chiddush is that even though Adam geographically may have been in a certain place, he still had control over circumstances that were unfolding in other areas. Ad shesarach v'higvila kadosh baruch hu es kocho miuto. So watch this. Adam sins, and what happens when Adam sins? What happens? His influence, his grasp, his control in this world is lessened and minimized. Just to show you this in the Pesukim, go back up for a moment to number 8. Kadosh Baruch Hu creates Adam. Vayivarech Osam Adam and Chava. God blessed them. Vayomer Lahem Elokim. Piru Urevu Umelues Haaretz. So be fruitful, multiply, fill up the world. Vikiv Shuha. This word is one of the most important words. Kiv Shuha. Kiv Shuha literally means what? Dominate, conquer, subdue the world. So what in the Urudu b'digasayam, you should rule over the fish of the sea, and the birds of the heavens, ubechol chayo haromeses al haaretz, and ultimately all the animals. So this is amazing. God tells man one word, and that one word, by the way, has forever shaped the trajectory of the human experience. Kivshua means conquer it. Conquer the world. Own the world. Look at this Sfarno number 9. Kivshua, shetaginu b'sichleichem. You literally protect yourself with your intellect. Use your intellect to subdue and conquer the world. Let me just give you a simple example of this. You ever wonder why it is that we spend so much money? It's less money now, but it was much more money historically on a space program. Right? I don't know what NASA's budget is, but it's less than it was before, but it's a lot of money. I would venture to say in the billions. So you ever ask yourself a very simple question? We've got so many problems right down here that the truth is, why worry about what's out there just yet? You know what? Fine, we'll get to space. Let's first solve world hunger. Let's solve disease. Let's take care of all of the problems that are staring us right in the face. And then we'll figure out the moon, and we'll figure out the Mars, and we'll figure out, we'll make the Hubble telescope bigger, and we'll find this, we'll find that. Why? Why the preoccupation, and why the fascination with pushing the frontier further and further? Why? It's this word. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam told Adam HaRishon, v'kivshuha, I want you to conquer the world. I want you to conquer the fish in the sea. I don't want you just to live on the surface. I want you to plumb the depths of the ocean. And I want you to try to go as far up in the heavens as you can. The Ribbono Shel Olam commanded us to own our world. He says, don't live in your bubble. Don't live in your bubble. Don't live in your Dalaramas. Don't live just behind your walls. Get out and conquer the world. The original mandate of man was to control his circumstances. Get out in the world, subdue the animal kingdom, push the frontier as much as you can, and exert your grip. Exert your control wherever you can. That's the original piece of creation. What happens? And again, so that's how Chaim Shlomo understands the Gemara. Adam HaRishon, min ha'aretz, ad l'rakia. Adam HaRishon, his job is to control the world. And by the way, here's the amazing part. He's actually, in the original plan, would have been able to do so. He would have been able to control the fish in the sea, the birds in the heavens. His influence, his understanding, and his control would have spread from one end of the world to the next. What then happens? Meaning it represents a state of where man has absolute control over his circumstances. What happens? Adam sins. And remember, what was Lashon of the Gemara? Ribbono Shel Olam took his hand, umi'oto, and he diminished him. Where does that diminution, how does it manifest itself? Take a look at number 10. So the Pasuk again says, this is post-sin. So remember, 8 is pre-sin. You know, Rav Soloveitchik writes that there's Adam 1 and Adam 2. There's two different stories of Adam HaRishon. There's a story of Adam HaRishon in the first part of creation, and there's a story of Adam HaRishon in the second part of creation. And really, again, there's Adam HaRishon pre-sin, Adam HaRishon post-sin, and they're two dramatically different people. So number 8 is Adam HaRishon pre-sin. Adam HaRishon pre-sin, his entire destiny can be encapsulated in one word, v'kivshua, control the world. Control the world. What happens? Adam HaRishon post-sin. Ula Adam Amar, ki shamata l'kol ishtecha, v'tolcha min ha'etz asher tzivisicha le'mor lo socha mimenu. So what happens? God says to Adam, because you listened to your wife, you ate from the forbidden fruit, arura ha'adama ba'avurecha. The earth will be cursed because of you. Bi'itzavon tochlana kol yimei chayecha. with toil. Translate itzavon as toil, but itzavon is really not toil. Itzavon is frustration. With frustration, you will eat all the days of your life. V'kotz v'dardar tatzmiach lach. It will cause thorns and thistles to grow for you. V'achalto es esev hasada. And you will eat the grass from the earth. So what does this mean? V'kotz v'dardar tatzmiach lach. That thorns will sprout for you. And Rashi HaKadosh here says something that sounds so simple, but it captures the essence of the present day post-sin human condition. He says, V'kotz, number 11, V'kotz v'dardar tatzmiach lach. Ha'aretz. Kishatizraena mineis zuroim, tatzmiach kotz v'dardar. So says Rashi, you know what the curse of Adam HaRishon is? You see, in the pre-sin world, you got out what you put in. Why? Because man controlled the world. Man had control over his circumstances. If you expend X amount of effort, you will reap X amount of results. You plant wheat, you're going to get wheat. You plant barley, you're going to plant barley. In the post-sin world, it's be'itzavon tochano kol yimei chayecha. Man no longer has complete control over his circumstances. Man no longer has the ability for kivshua. Man can no longer control all of the variables in life. And how does that manifest itself? That sometimes you're going to plant wheat, and what are you going to get from the ground? You won't get barley, but you will get thorns. You will get over. In other words, you could put in all of the effort, and you may not realize the proportional amount of results. This is the reality in the post-sin world. And by the way, what we're describing over here is one of the most frustrating dynamics we all encounter in life. Because at some point in time, although if you've never had this, you're very lucky, but I'm eventually saying most of us had this to some degree, you put in a huge amount of effort into something, expecting a particular result, and that result does not come. Very often, not only does that result not come, but the result that does occur is something so dramatically different than anything you imagined or anything you wanted. That's called a lack of kivshuha. That's kotz v'dardar tatzmiach. That's planting wheat and getting thorns instead. That's what it means to live in the post-sin world. We don't control all of the circumstances. We don't control all of the variables. Our grasp over our lives, our grasp over our existence has been fundamentally diminished. Now, watch this. Turn the page to 12 days. From Rav Chaim Shulevitz's comments on this. So remember again, the Sichos Musar sees all of this in this one Gemara. Adam HaRishon is originally min ha'aretz ad l'rakia. That's the Kivshua state. He controls everything in the heavens and the earth. Sins, Kadosh Baruch Hu takes his hand, umi'ato, and he diminishes him. Kotz v'dardar tatzmiach. Adam HaRishon does not have the same level of control in this world. Does not have the same level of control. Forget about the fish. Forget about the seas. And forget about the heavens. Doesn't have the same level of control over his own life, over his own circumstances. The reality with which we contend with to this very day. But watch this. Paragraph base. Ulam. Yesh ladas. This is exceptionally important. I'm sorry to punch those, but it's important to know. Yesh ladas. Shadayin rav me'otu kocho shel adam gam kayom. You see, here's the problem. Sometimes after reading number 10 and 11, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Bitzavon tochlana, kotz v'dardar tatzmiach," you're not going to get what you put in, you don't control. See, sometimes people interpret a lack of complete control as what? As no control. And the Chaim Shulevitz says, that is not true. Even though we don't have complete control, nevertheless, it's important to know, Shadayin Rav Ma'od, Hu Kocho Shala Adam Kayom. We still wield and yield an incredible amount of power. Ubi Yodo Lahasig Harbe Ma'avar L'Kocho Savatvayim. And we have the ability to create realities that are far beyond our reach and far beyond our abilities. How so? V'nirish Ezeh HaBeir. Listen to how beautiful this is. B'mash Amru Chazal Ala Kosov. V'tishlach Es Amasa. So remember again, going back a few parshios to Shmos. Little baby Moshe is put in a basket on the Nile by his mother Yocheved in order to escape a death sentence at the hands of the Egyptians. So what happens? Bas Paro is bathing by the river. Pasuk says, Vatishlach es hamasa. Literally, she sent forward her hand and she grabbed the basket. So we're all familiar with the famous midrashic interpretation of Rashi. Sheneshtarveva yada shalbitya bas paro amos harbe. The Gemara says that what happened, the miracle occurred, her arm extended, many amos, many cubits, feet upon feet extended, in order for her to be able to hold, to grab hold of the basket. So Chaim Shlevit says, de'ein ha'kavana shenesarach yada mamish. You do not... This in general, when it comes to more midrashic homiletic statements, you could be a very good Jew, even if you don't believe them literally. So if you've always had a hard time believing that Bas Paro's hand extended 25 feet into the Nile River to grab the basket, you're in good company, because Chaim Shmulevitz doesn't take it literally either. I don't believe that Rashi actually means, that the Gemara means, that her hand, like she's like plastic lady, you know, and her hand extended into the middle of the Nile. So what does it mean? If it's not to be understood literally, so what does it mean? He says, Elo shal yidekach, middle of paragraph base. Elo shal yidekach, sha'azra bitya bas paro es kol kochos nafsha lahatzila sayelet. Rather, what's unfolding over here? There's a young woman by the name of Bitya. Whether her name is Bitya, Basya, or that's just a descriptive name for Baska, the daughter of God, whoever she is, she's the daughter of Pharaoh. And what does she decide? She makes a dramatic decision that she has to save this baby. It's in defiance of her father's edict. It's in defiance of the entire norm of her people. She makes a decision. I must save this baby. It doesn't matter what's going to happen. It doesn't matter if it's right. This is what I have to do. She makes a decision and she has laser-like precision, singular focus that this is what has to get done. He says, this is their singular mission. I have to save that child no matter what. When she decided to have a singular focus, that this task, in this case the task was saving the little baby, had to be accomplished no matter what, she found within herself the koach, the strength of Adam HaRishon before the sin. That koach, ultimately again, of a koach that extends min ha'aretz ad l'rakia. L'hasig es hateva ba'ushatas yada afilu mimerchak shel amos harbe. You know, did her hand extend many abos? It's quite possible not. But you know what? Here's the amazing part. She decided that something had to get done. And when you decide in life that something must get done, and that thing is a noble cause, you find within yourself the koach of Adam HaRishon before the sin. You find within yourself that koach, that strength, that goes from the earth all the way through the heavens. Ein gavul lekoach ha'adam kishehu mitazer ba'omets gvura. There is nothing that can stand in our way. There is no limit to the strength we possess when we go ahead and we decide to gird ourselves with strength and fortitude. Ubiyado lahasik harbi ma'aver lekochos avatar. You know what Chaim Shlevitz is talking about? Chazal say this in a very simpler phrase. The simpler phrase of Chazal, should put on this page, is ein davar omeid bifnei haratzon. Nothing stands in the way of a person's will. If you want something badly enough, and again, it has to be something worthy, and it has to be something meaningful, but if you want it badly enough, and you're willing to do whatever it takes to get it, your hand will extend. You'll be able to reach far beyond your abilities. Because when the Jew sets his or her sights on something, and says, it must occur no matter what, they find within themselves the koach of Adam HaRishon, prior to the sin. Incredible. Ein davar omei b'fnei haratzon. Take a look at that paragraph Gimel. He gives another example. V'chim atzin v'Yakov Avinu alav hashalom. Another example of this is Yaakov Avinu. So what happens? Vayigal es ha'even me'al pi ha'be'er. So remember again the famous story. Yaakov Avinu comes. He's coming to Haran, to the house of Lavan. He's looking to find his uncle Lavan. He comes, the shepherds are all around. So what happens? They have to wait till everybody gathers because there's a large stone that sits on top of the well. So again, Yaakov Avinu sees Rachel Imenu in the distance. He's so overtaken by her that what does he do? He rolls the stone off the well. Perish Rashi. For Yaakov Avinu, removing the stone from the top of the well was like removing the stopper from a bottle. He says, so great was his koach. Gam kan, ein hakavon kipshuta lekoach gufni. Rashi is not describing Yaakov Avinu's physical strength. So what is he describing? Ela kifi shamar bala pait betfilas keshem, yichad leiv vegal even mipi be'erchayim ba'avuro altim namayim. What does this mean? Vahari vadai, she'in anu mevak shema'is HaKadosh Baruch Hu mayim b'schus gvuras ha'guf neshal Yaakov, ela shekocho hoya al yidei yichad leiv. So what happens? Yaakov Avinu makes a decision. And what's his decision? What's his decision? The stone has to come off the top of the well. Whatever it is, whether it's because he was so smitten by Rachel Imenu that he wanted her to have an easier time, yet he didn't want her to exert, whatever the reason is, he puts his mind to something and he decides that there is no option but to accomplish the given task. And therefore, when a Jew has that mindset, that what I need to do must occur, that I find the Adam HaRishon before the sin koach within myself, I find that strength, mina aretz ad l'rakia, and I find the ability to do what needs to get done. Ubekoach zeh, hupal mashalamala mikoach enosh lifol, ubeschus yichod aleiv anu mevakshim. Skip down to Dalet. Al yomar Adam, so beautiful. Sometimes, you know, it's always good to have role models. Make sure to choose the right kind of role models in life. So let's say I say my role model is Rabbi Akiva Eiger, great tzaddik. How am I ever going to get to the level of Rabbi Akiva Eiger? He had a brilliant mind. He was an incredible individual. Who am I? I'm such a small person. He says, Variko chasi dalem ma'atim, tosi biyado. Chaim Shlomo says it's not true. Ki akol taloi birtzuno biyuchlibo. These are incredible words that on one hand are very scary. And they're very scary because if you accept the premise of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, then it creates an incredible sense of obligation for us. I'll explain that in just a moment. Im yisbomen v'yeda ulevavo yoven v'yargish. Et zatzorech hagodol aliyah b'toros. Okay, let's explain this outside. So Chaim Shmulevitz essentially advances the following idea. Ein davar omid b'fnei haratzon. In life, if you want something badly enough, and it is meaningful to have, it's important to have, and you tell yourself that failure is not an option, then you will find within yourself the koach, the strength of Adam HaRishon, prior to the sin. That koach that represents a full control over circumstances. That koach that goes from the earth to the heavens, and you will accomplish what you need to accomplish. Or in other words, Rezer Chaim Shalevitz saying, and again, this is where it becomes a little bit personally scary to accept and emotionally ingest these words. Very often in life, we go ahead and we embark upon a particular mission to accomplish whatever it is, you fill in the blank. Whether it's something personal, something in my relationships, whether with others or with our Kadosh Baruch Hu, whatever it might be. And you know how very often life projects begin? They begin with a very, damning phrase. What's the most damning phrase with which you could begin any life initiative? I'll try. I'll try. And so sometimes they say, I'm going to try really hard. So understand, when you say, I'll try builds in an escape hatch. Because what I'll try means, you know, I'm going to try really hard, but I also recognize that I may fail. The moment in life we give ourselves an option for failure, we will fail. Because the nature of human beings is to always find the path of least resistance. So if I start in a life endeavor and failure is an option, I'm going to try really hard, but I may not succeed, I will not succeed. And therefore, says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, and this is an incredible life lesson, the only way to really accomplish something in life is to tell myself, failure is not an option. I know what I have to accomplish. Now again, sometimes I don't know how I'm going to accomplish it, and I certainly may not know the method of accomplishment, the mechanism of accomplishment, or for that matter, the timeline of accomplishment. But I know that it has to get done. And failure is not an option. It may take me longer, it may be more difficult, I may have to embark upon a more circuitous route, but failure is not an option. It must get done. When a person takes that approach, like says Chaim Shulevitz, what I'm doing is, I'm accessing the koach within me that is the koach of Adam HaRishon before the sin. That strength resides within each of us. It's not on the surface. I have to access it because it's deep down. That's the koach that extends where I see I have control over my circumstances. I have control over my life. And if I want to accomplish something and I tell myself that failure is not an option, that I must cross the finish line, I'll cross it. Now I may end up crawling across it. I may end up dragging myself across it. I may not be able to finish that marathon within 2 hours. It may take me 2 years, but I'm crossing that finish line. I'm getting across that. I am accomplishing that task. See, often we think, well, how can you ever say such a thing like that? You can't guarantee anything. So that is the most wonderful cop-out mechanism. And Chaim Shulevitz says, absolutely, I could guarantee it. I could guarantee it. If I pledge to myself I'm crossing the finish line, I'm crossing it. I can't control a lot of the variables along the way. It may take longer, may be more difficult, but when I say to myself that failure is not an option, again, I access that Adam HaRishon Koach, Min HaAretz, Ad L'Rakia. I take control over my circumstances, and the only way is to go forward. Now, why is this important? Watch this. Take a look at number 13. Let's go back now to the Makkah of Shchin for just a moment. So remember again, just to reorient ourselves a little bit. Remember, it was after the Makkah of Shchin, after the Makkah of Boils, that the Torah says, Vayechazek Hashem Eslev Paro. Paro's ready to go ahead and give in. He's ready to give in. He's ready to let the people go. God steps in, hardens Paro's heart. Paro, therefore, again, chooses to keep the people enslaved. We're trying to figure out what was it about the Makkah of Shchin? What was it about the Makkah of Boils that was ready, that pushed Paro to release the people? So again, look at number 13. Fayom Hashem Moshe, I'm reading the Pesukim again. So what happens? God says to Moshe, Kichulochem melochaf nechem piach kivshon, take a handful of soot, uzurako Moshe Hashem melene Paro. And let Moshe go ahead and throw it up in front of Paro. Then what happens? The soot, v'hayala avak al kol eretz Yisrael. So remember again, there's a number of things happening over here. Moshe Rabbeinu is throwing the soot to the heavens. The soot is coming down and blanketing all of Egypt. Says Rashi number 14, uzirako Moshe, kol davar hanizrak bekoach, eino nizrak ela biyadacha. So understand, if you want to throw something a distance, you throw it with one hand, not with two. Not with two. So based on that, the Sisei Chachamim number 15 asks an interesting question. He says, "Umi'achar shebenkach irolones shahalach avak al panei kol panei eretz." Now remember, understand, this whole thing is miraculous. Why is this whole thing miraculous? Why is it miraculous? Because Moshe Rabbeinu is taking a handful of soot, and the Rabbi is throwing it all the way up to the heavens. That's miraculous by itself. Miracle number one. Miracle number two is what? It spreads all over Egypt. So the Sisei Chacham asks a very interesting question. He says, so this is obviously all about the miracles. So if you want to amplify and magnify the miracle, then Moshe, what should you do? What should you do? Use two hands. Because one hand, to throw something a distance, you use one hand. Use two hands. He says, why does Moshe throw it with one hand and with force? Yose haya nes galui, im haya zarko b'shteya, dav shlo b'koach. It would have been even better had Moshe Rabbeinu taken the soot with two hands and not thrown it with such force. Rather, again, just a little sprinkle, let it ascend heavenward on its own, and then come down and blank. In other words, what the Sisei Chacham is asking is, if you're trying to put on a miraculous show, if you're going to do it, then do it right. Right? So why are you going ahead, magnify the miracle, one hand worth of soot, two hands, not one hand, don't throw it, just simply sprinkle it. So look at number 16. So again, Chaim Shulevitz answers, with this will conclude. He says, Hare, Shebemasha Zark Moshe Schofen Hafiach Hashamaimo, Lo Haya Komes. Alex, so rather, says Chaim Shulevitz, something absolutely amazing. You know, there might have been a miracle that the soot spread all over Egypt. But the one non-miraculous part of this Makkah was the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to take the soot in one hand and throw it up to the heavens. Why is that not miraculous? He says, "Biyad achos higia hafiach hashamayim ve'eino muvan v'chibakocho shal adam lizrok piach haleshamayim." Does any person have the ability to throw a handful of soot and have it reach the heavens? Ha'ein ze neis l'mala miderach hateva. Is this not an out of the ordinary miracle? Elohu sha'amar, listen to this line. I meant to underline it. Ein keitz ve'ein gvul l'mash sha'adam misugal lif'ol b'koach yichod halev. What we learn from this makah is that there is no limit to what a person is able to accomplish when they go ahead and they put their heart and they put their strength to accomplishing something. V'yesh lomar, shemishum kach nimog libo shal paro v'nichnam. So again, so take a step back. So Chazal says such an incredible chiddush. He explains that the Ribono shel Olam wants Moshe to take the soot in one hand and he wants him to throw it heavenward. Now, if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, what's the first question you have? Okay, if it's right, if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, very simple question: how am I supposed to do that? Right? Again, you could go home and you could try this. Right? Take a handful of soot, try to throw it heavenward, and what's going to happen? Nothing. Right? Nothing. Hopefully, you're not standing downwind, because otherwise, you're going to be covered by all of it in a second. Meaning, you can't throw a fistful of soot heavenward. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, first order, Moshe, I'm going to do my part. Meaning, here's what I need you to do. I need you to get the soot to the heavens. Once you get the soot to the heavens, I, God, will take care of the rest. I will blanket it upon Egypt, and I will turn the soot into boils. So if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, you're thinking to yourself, okay, got it. How exactly am I supposed to do it? But what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? What does Moshe Rabbeinu do? Moshe Rabbeinu says, I have no choice. It's what has to get done. God told me that I need to throw a fist full of soot to the heavens. There is no option for me but to throw a fist full of soot to the heavens. So what does he do? He takes a fist full of soot and throws it to the heavens. Moshe Rabbeinu demonstrated through his behavior in Dover Omid Bifnei HaRatzon. If you don't give yourself an escape hatch in life, if you don't say, I'm going to try really hard, if you say failure is not an option, you could accomplish. Now, obviously, this is an exaggerated example of this. Don't go home and try this and become frustrated if you can't get your fistful of soot to the heavens. Obviously, this was the divine. But again, this is the paradigm. This is the lesson. This is the model. The Ibn Shalom is telling Moshe, I need you. Understand. You have to understand something. This is why the Torah goes into such detail with all of the makos, because each and every one of these plagues is oozing with such incredible life lessons. So here in the middle of the makah of Shechin, the makah of boils, God is teaching Moshe, is teaching Paro, is teaching Klal Yisrael, that when you put your mind to something and you say to yourself, I must cross the finish line. Failure is not an option. No, I can't just try hard. I have to get the job done. You will find a way to take your koach, represented by the fist. You will find a way to take your soot, representing whatever the project is, and you will find your way to cast it heavenward. Heavenward representing the finish line in life. And so what happens? So there's a kind of something amazing. V'yeshlomer shemishum kach, I'm in number 16, three lines up from the bottom. V'yeshlomer shemishum kach, nimog libo shal paro v'nichna b'makazu. Now we can understand why what? Now we can understand why Paro is so overwhelmed by this makam. It wasn't the divine display of strength that wowed him. Rather, what was it? Kochosov hakabirim va'oz libo shamosh rabbeinu. Hech inuhu yosra min hanisim shenasu al yado l'malo midarach hateva. This is mind-blowing. Says the Sichos Musar, Paro is much more overwhelmed by Moshe's handful of soot than he is by all of God's supernatural activity. Which makes perfect sense. Because the fact that God could do supernatural stuff, Shkoyach, you're God. Of course you could do supernatural stuff. You could do whatever you want. the ability of a mere mortal to take a handful of soot and to have such resolve to figure out a way to get it heavenward and to give yourself no choice but to cross that finish line, Paro is blown away by this. Paro is not blown away by God. Paro is blown away by the incredible resolve of Moshe Rabbeinu. And as a result, Ukvar Haya Muchan Lishaleach Es Yisrael Elula Hechbed Hashem Vechazak Es Libo. It's amazing. And therefore, Paro is so overwhelmed, not by God, but by the powerful resolve of Moshe Rabbeinu, that he essentially says, I'm no match for you. I'm no match for you. Again, he's not bending his knee before God. He's bending his knee before Moshe. Moshe, you're awesome. Right? Moshe, you're incredible. Moshe Rabbeinu, you're the first person I ever met in life who ever made the statement, this has to happen. I have to cross the finish line. Failure is not an option. There's no trying hard. There's only one way and that's to accomplish. I have to get the soot heavenward. Paro so overwhelmed by this incredible person that he realizes that he is no match for him and ultimately he's willing to bend his knee. Now again, God intervenes. God hardens Paro's heart. Now we understand that. Why? For a very simple reason. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam needs it to be that Paro bends his knee before who?
God.
Before God and not before Moshe. Meaning part of this is a theological education for the Egyptians as well. So to release the people because you're in awe of Moshe, no. You need to yield to God. You need to yield to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So let's bring this full circle. So you remember again, 45 minutes ago, we asked the first question. What was the first question? You remember? Good. So right, my first question was, remember, why does Paro chase away Moshe Rabbeinu? So remember again, it was number one on your sheet. The beginning of this week's parasha after the Makkah of Aaron. But now the question is even more intensified. Paro is treating Moshe and Aaron with such covet, with such honor, with such dignity. And again, we see after the Makkah of Shin, he's in awe of these individuals. And yet again, in this week's parasha, we see Vaigarish Osa Me'ez Pnei Paro. He just sends them away. He chases them away. That's it. How can you treat them so disparagingly when you were in such awe of them just a few psukim earlier? But we understand. We understand why. Because anger is the most incredible defense mechanism that people put up. If someone says something that I don't like, right? What's often our reaction when someone says something we don't like? All right, you're all tzaddikim. All right, I'll tell you. Right? You get angry. Now, here's the amazing part. We know this deep down. The truer, this, I don't know if truer is the right word. Is this truer a word? The more true the statement the person makes is, then what? The angrier I get. The more you hit me in my core, the more your words penetrate to my essence, the angrier I get. Because that anger is that initial defense mechanism. It's that initial wall. I can't hear what you are saying right now. Because what you're saying is unequivocal truth. But it hurts me to my core that I'm not living the right way. I'm not doing the right thing. I'm not the person I want to be. Now, what often happens, more often than not, is that people calm down. They take a deep breath and they're able to ingest that which has been said to them. But often when confronted with a jarring truth, the first response is often anger. How dare you? What a chutzpah. How can you talk to me that way? How can you say that thing? It's that wall that keeps the truth out and prevents me from having to make any type of course correcting or life adjusting actions. So what happens if we bring this all together? Paro is awed by Moshe Rabbeinu, but understand that awe. Okay, so God hardens his heart. That awe of Moshe Rabbeinu, this idea of failure is not an option. This koach of Adam HaRishon, with koach pre-sin of extending from the heavens and the earth, this control over all of my circumstances yields a very scary reality. What's the scary reality? Scary reality is that means if I don't accomplish things in my life. You see, we live in a society, we've spoken about this many times before, we live in a society where if something goes wrong for me, what is the first reaction? Right, blame. There's always someone to blame. I often reference, to me, what stands out in my mind most was the, remember the lady who sued McDonald's for the coffee. Right? She ordered a cup of coffee. She put it between her knees. She got very badly burned. But again, like, why are you opening a cup of coffee between your knees? And here's the best part. The best part is, you know, she won. She won, right? That's why, by the way, when you buy a cup of coffee, you will notice that what does it say on it? Caution, contents hot. Like, shkoyach, I know, that's why I bought it. Right? I know caution. Again, that's because of this. Understand, but this is the nature of society. So somebody goes on a murderous rampage, the first thing we do is you try to figure out, you know, who mistreated them or who they... You know, Judaism doesn't subscribe to that. Yes, there are things in life that impact us. There are people in life that impact us. But at the end of the day, if you accept the ideology of Moshe Rabbeinu, if you accept the ideology of the handful of soot, if you accept the ideology of the koach of Adam from the heavens to the earth, you know, that yields a very difficult reality, which is, if I don't accomplish things in life, there's no one to blame but me. If I don't do what I want to do or what I need to do, if I do not self-actualize in the way that I am supposed to, the buck of my life stops with me. And if something doesn't materialize, it's simply because I gave myself the out. I gave myself the escape hatch. I said to myself, I'm going to try really hard. And so what initially awes Paro is something that he must reject later on. Because to accept this mindset heightens the threshold of life responsibility. So suddenly now when I look back at my life and I look at all of those things that did not materialize, I look at all of those things that I wanted to do that I have not done, and all of those situations where I've ascribed or I've assigned blame to someone else, if I'm honest with myself, if I wanted it badly enough, if I told myself failure was not an option, if I was committed to throwing the handful of soot heavenward, it would have materialized. Paro understands that this heightens the threshold for life responsibility, and he doesn't want that level of life responsibility. So what does he do instead? Vaigarish osam me'es pene Paro. I don't want to look at you. I don't want to see you. I don't want to gaze at you. Because when I look at you, Moshe, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the fact that every single failure I've encountered is because I allowed myself to fail. That every single finish line I did not cross is because I did not try hard enough. You, Moshe, remind me that I have failed to take responsibility for my circumstances, and that is why I am not where I want to be. I have no interest in looking at that. I have no interest in thinking about that. And therefore, Vaigarish Osam Me'es Pene Paro. So we see again that interwoven in these stories of the Makos are not just the stories of Egyptian punishment, not just the stories of divine retribution, but in it really is the very framework for successful living. It is true that we live in the world of the post-Adam HaRishon sin. We live in the world of Kotz V'Dardar Titzmach, that sometimes we could put in effort and our effort does not necessarily yield the desired results. That is the reality. Because once upon a time we had all the control in the world, now we don't. But lest you think that control, min ha'aretz ad harakia, is no longer in our reach. So again, we learn from this section that's not true. If a person puts their mind to something, if a person says failure is not an option, if I tell myself that I have to cross the finish line, then I will be able to take my soot and throw it heavenwards. I will be able to take those large stones and roll it off the wells. We should be zochem yartz Hashem to be able to find these kochos, the koach of Adam HaRishon within ourselves, and to cross the finish lines that we so badly desire to. All right. Thank you.